And over here, opposite from the porn section, is our main exhibit. It's television scenery and film scenery, and both an alien from Alien and Colin Baker from Doctor Who have puked on this. Amazing stuff, isn't it? Feel free to have a close inspection, but don't touch that third panel over. We never quite got it clean.
Oh, that's Crozier's lab, isn't it?
Interesting stain, that one.
It's still got the wobble.
Hello, guys. What are you doing here?
Well, this is the scenery from Doctor Who's Mind Warp. If you look really carefully down there, you can see some bite marks where I believe Brian Blessed chewed the scenery.
Yes. Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
I'm Asdaman.
And I, yes, I am...
someone who really, really has to make that appointment I spoke about. And this is Trixie. Mm-hmm. Oh. Trixie does not make that sound.
Well, sometimes.
Sometimes she does.
Maybe when she goes outside out, in the garden. Oh, I have a note to make. Oh. I played a bit of the podcast to one of the women I work with.
Bad
and
move.
And she says, you have a voice that's ideal for CBeebies.
I'm not quite sure how to take that. So, it's because I'm used to talking to small children.
Hello, Karen.
Hello, sweetie.
Anyway, without further ado, teeth marks in the scenery besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Woohoo! Woo-hoo!
Doctor Who News.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Tennant's vinyl adventure.
Ooh, vinyl.
David John Tennant, actor of stage and screen, is getting into vinyl with his new Doctor Who story.
Isn't that a bit kinky?
Hmm.
Yeah. Reprising his twin roles as the 10th Doctor and narrator, see 2012 WAA and others, Tennant will be bringing us The Last Voyage, an audiobook on LP record. Demon Records, purveyors of Doctor Who story soundtracks on LP, will be releasing the two-disc set as part of Record Store Day's Black Friday event on the 28th of November. The audio-exclusive story was written by Dan Abnett and read by the aforementioned Tennant entirely on his lonesome. The set can be bought at participating independent record shops, though the story was originally released on CD back in 2010.
I thought it was.
Yes, not that new, really. 15 years, give or take, you know.
I thought the name was familiar.
Yes, yeah, I'm sure I've got a couple of copies of it.
I was about to interject, but she beat me to it.
It wasn't one of the freebies that came
it
with the
might
magazine.
Have been, yeah, it was that sort of era, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was actually released as a sellable CD.
Oh, definitely did come out of his own.
And then a couple of years later, it's released as a freebie with Radio Times.
Yeah.
That's right. And I know I've seen it in Crawley Library.
Yeah, oh,
as well,
okay.
So you can take it out there.
It might have been in that Police Box set too.
Yeah.
Maybe in the Pandorica set. Yeah. I don't know. It's probably come out a few times.
Yeah. We're just spoiling this exclusive vinyl.
This is the first time in vinyl. First time on
it
vinyl.
It is the first time in vinyl.
Avengers news.
Oh, yeah.
Purdy goes blue. Fans of gesticulating coffee peddler Gareth Hunt and his comrades Joanna Lumley and Patrick McNee can rejoice. The late 70s continuation of The Avengers is coming to 4K Blu-ray. All 26 episodes of The New Adventures is coming to a 10-disc box set in November. The ultra-high definition remaster also includes new bonus material, including an exclusive interview with Lumley, new introductions and commentaries on several episodes, a 64-page booklet, and a 32-page comic.
Mm.
Hmm. The box set is officially released on the 10th of November, and the day before, a special event will be held at Riverside Studios that will include a screening and a Q&A. The 4K box set is a cool £150.
Ouch.
But a regular HD Blu-ray set can be had for a mere £90.
Even so, that's still ouch as well.
Yeah. For 10 discs is probably not that bad, yeah. But it's still a bit pricey.
But it is, again, the whole lot.
Yeah, both seasons. So yeah,
and Joanna Lumley's the only one left out of the trio now, isn't she?
Yeah, for quite some time.
Yeah.
Was this her first sort of big role on television?
I think it was her first breakout role.
Breakout role, yeah.
Could be, yeah.
I think she'd appeared in as a Bond girl in one of the Bond films beforehand.
Did she? I didn't know that.
But that was only wasn't the main Bond girl. Yeah, it was one of the minor Bond girls.
And she kept her top on.
Yeah. And okay. I think she did a Hammer.
Hammer House of Horror. Well, she probably didn't keep her top on.
But that Purdy was her first major time she got noticed.
And then after that, it would have been something like Sapphire and Steel, would it?
Yeah.
Yeah. The big coincidence there is that Purdy was Keith's first crush, so it was first for both of them. Purdy and Sally James, although Sally James was a later and more moist crush.
Thank you. And I think Purdy's haircut went to David McCallum in Sapphire and Steel.
I think you're right.
Or certainly Invisible Man.
Yes.
Good grief, yes. Yes, we all remember the Invisible Man.
Daredevil.
Ooh.
Born. Yet again. Again. Disney may be pulling back a bit on their Disney Plus TV series, but that hasn't stopped them sucking cocks back into a third season. It's not. This is what's
written. 12.
Back for a third season of Marvel's Daredevil Born Again. Yes. Charlie Cox, and I apologise here, Vincent D'Onofrio, thank you, are back as Matt Murdock, Daredevil, and Wilson Fisk, Kingpin, respectively. According to Marvel's head of TV streaming and administration, Brad Windebaum...
In terms of Daredevil, yeah, we are greening it for season 3 and we start shooting next year.
Season 1 went out back in March, with the second season due on Disney Plus in March 2026. And the third season is expected in... you've got it! March 2027.
I still haven't caught the first season of this, but
I watched
quite good.
I remember watching the original Netflix.
The original, yes.
Yeah.
They've stolen the original Doctor Who slot from 2005, haven't they?
They have, so, yeah. Every year in March-ish. So, any addendums?
I have an addendum.
Oh, yeah.
John Woodvine is unfortunately dead.
Dead.
Oh. 96 years old.
Wow.
He's been in everything since 1958. He was, for Doctor Who, he was Marshal of Atreus in the Armageddon Factor in 1979. He's also been in the Tripods, the Saints, absolutely everything. He was, Trixie, he was in the Crown, Zed Cars, about 47 different episodes of Casualty in the Bill.
I had no idea he was still alive, but I really liked
he's not
him.
Now,
in,
that's why I said... dead.
Yeah. I really liked Armageddon Factor. I thought he was quite good in it.
Yeah. But, if you don't recognise the name, it was this chap.
I've
got a picture
faces.
Of him here.
Yeah,
I recognise him, yeah.
And also, Gilly Cooper popped her clogs.
She did.
I only mentioned this because she wrote Rivals, which David Tennant is in, and this woman could write the best smut that's ever graced the page.
Late 70s, early 80s.
Oh, yeah. God, she's good.
Owen Hyacinth.
A bosom hasn't heaved unless Gilly Cooper wrote about it in detail.
And Hyacinth Bouquet as well.
Oh, Patricia Routledge, It's not been a good week for British actors and writers.
She was also in her late 90s, wasn't she?
She was.
In 96.
She was,
So very
and
good innings.
Dr. Jane Goodall.
Yes.
Or Professor Jane Goodall, I think. And the worrying thing is that David Attenborough paid tribute to her and he's 99 now.
Yeah.
But on to cheerier things.
I have an addendum.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Just recently passed, the 5th of October, Amazon Prime did James Bond Day.
Oh, did they? Okay.
And they put up all the Bond films with the little icon you could click on to watch the Bond film.
Presumably they have that anyway. They own it.
Except for it has caused a little bit of a outraged backlash.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. For the little icons, they used the movie posters for the films.
Ah, right. Yes.
And in doing so, they have airbrushed out all the guns.
And the smoking.
Airbrushed out the guns?
So, airbrushed out the guns being held by Mr. Bond.
So they're
walkie-talkies, were they?
We move hell and high water to airbrush out pretend guns that a pretend person is holding. But anyone suggests that perhaps it's time to cut down on real guns?
Half of the Connery ones, him in the pose holding
a gun.
Well,
this is it.
He's got a banana now.
There has been a mention, Rufus Jones has gone on to Twitter. I still refuse to call it X, but has gone on to Twitter and has stated, Amazon have removed the guns from their Bond posters, giving a tantalising impression that both Sean Connery and Pierce Brosnan think you're a wanker.
And it's, the pictures look true. Amazing. They are arms crossed, basically.
Doing the make it so pose.
Gareth Hunt again, doesn't it?
Yep.
But with no coffee beans.
They have now been, since that tweet has been posted, all the posters have now been replaced with a still from the film.
What
does that mean for their upcoming reboot of the series?
Yeah.
Well, Bond's just going to be going pew, pew, pew with his fingers.
Give him a serious talking to.
Lasers are fine. It's just anything that shoots bullets.
Well, yeah. It's going to look like he's vaguely pointing at people and they're just flying themselves backwards.
Yeah, every Bond cover just pointing in that direction. Yeah.
And the baddies will sort of point at him and suddenly, ooh, shoulder's bleeding.
Everyone pointing to their favourite spot on the wall. Yep.
And that's the end of the news. Right, we've been watching some television.
Oh, yes.
This time on Disney.
Yes.
Disney Plus, even.
It is here.
We've been watching Alien, Earth. Pause for music. This is what, 8 episodes?
It is. We've already reviewed the first 5 technically, but you may as well cover the entire first season.
Yes.
It was brilliant. It had better be leading into a second season, because it can't leave it like that.
The ending of the final episode leaves it wide open.
Oh, totally.
I have to say, though, with the ending, lots have happened leading up to the end, and then the plot just stops.
It does.
It's not really, as finale's going, it's not satisfying. It's literally part of a story and you're stuck in the middle of it.
That's why I hope there's a second season, because otherwise that's going to be very, very annoying.
Well, we're not giving away too much. I mean, there was complete about face by the Wendy and the Lost Boys.
Yes. I wasn't seeing that coming, I did enjoy the last 3 episodes we did this time, so lots happened. I think still, though, episode 5 was the best. That was the sort of standalone episode.
Wasn't that good?
I have to say, I did enjoy in the last episode, Aid Edmondson getting frozen.
I've got to admit, I didn't see that coming.
Nor did I.
Until that episode, I thought, this is Eddie Hitler and Vivian, but without the cheeky chappiness to it. It's just hard-nosed and
vicious. But I think
vicious.
Both of us, as soon as he said, I was 6 years old and I made one. Then it's, it's Adrian Edmondson. Yes.
We were left on a cliffhanger with the eye monster suddenly appearing on the beach occupying a cadaver.
See, I wasn't sure. The eye monster, there was a couple, the eye monster and Whitehead. They seemed to be playing the Lord Varys from Game of Thrones role. You weren't quite sure whose side they were on or what their aims were. Yeah. And it seems like they were both just out for each other.
I don't know why, but I mean, Kershaw was reminding me of Sting. You know, that big bleached hairdo. You always expect him to start singing, "Woke up this morning."
We were debating in the first half of the season what the Iron Monster's motive was, because this time it was definitely confirmed. Yeah. It was working to distract everyone so that they'd get killed off by other things.
What's it called? In one of the reviews, it's called Itopus.
Yeah, Itopus.
The Itopus was sowing chaos to take advantage of so it could get out of there. It was deliberately screwing things up for opportunities.
Yeah, it's really cruel what it did to one of the children, though.
Distract him,
and then he gets eaten by a big bug.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. When it's banging on the side of its container, I mean, is it distracting or is it trying to attract somebody's attention?
I think it certainly... I'm not sure about the first time when aboard the... Oh, God.
Maginot.
Thank you, aboard the Maginot. But the second time where Isaac's concerned, I think that was to deliberately... Yeah. Cause chaos, mm-hmm. so it could take an opportunity to get out of there.
It definitely was an enemy of the alien, wasn't it, in the first half of the series?
Yeah, but that does not necessarily make it a friend of humans.
It does not, no. And that is a really eerie sheep, isn't it, the whole time, counting back at you doing pie. And they seem to quote Richard Herndl in The Five Doctors with that
pie quote, didn't they?
Literally word for word.
The ratio of the circumference of a circle to its diameter.
Oh, no, it's Tegan, isn't it?
Tegan. Is he pie?
Yeah. And I think I expected the genius boy to get it at the end of the series.
Oh, boy, yeah,
I was kind of hoping that.
No, I think that's more you were sort of lining him up for his comeuppance.
Yeah, rather messy comeuppance. Yeah,
there were some really decent deaths.
There was, wasn't there?
The woman, I can't remember her name, but she was engulfed by the big leaf thing from above and basically just crushed and digested her.
Yeah, you heard her head pop in didn't you?
Oh, and those fly creatures. Yeah, spitting out acid.
Yeah, eating minerals.
Mm. They digest on the outside.
That's it,
I think I said it before, the two guys who played Smee and Slightly, they were just so good. Yeah. You just wanted to cuddle them because they were just two small boys in over their heads.
Not even 12, I don't think.
No. I get their names mixed up, but I know that there was a scene on the beach where one of them realises he's been lied to by the other. And the guy that sort of is the father figure, looking after, he gets it with the chest burster, doesn't he?
And
one of the boys goes to pieces because it's like effectively his parent.
Yeah.
Oh,
and then Slightly carries on pulling him.
Dragging him.
You've got to get him to the beach. It just hadn't occurred to him that it was the thing inside him that they wanted.
That was the objective. That's all that he cared about.
Yeah.
Oh, and wasn't Nibs an absolute psychopath?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Brilliant.
Pulling jaws off.
They even reset her and she was still weird with that cuddly toy and you knew it was a weird kick-off.
Yeah. Mr. Strawberry.
Yeah. I think there were some problems as a child in the background.
When the guy grabbed Mr. Strawberry off her and threw him in the sea, he deserved a punch on the nose.
Yeah.
He did not deserve to have the lower half of his face torn off.
Why did she keep saying she was pregnant or carrying a child?
Well, that's it. I think... Because initially she was attacked by the Oedipus, and that had certain psychological effects. Mm. And I think she escaped into fantasy land.
She was quite small, wasn't she?
Yeah.
She was quite little when she was transplanted.
I expected the Wendy character talking about, you thought you were pregnant, that sort of thing. I expected that to trigger it and her to regress back to those memories and start doing it again. But maybe that'll be picked up.
It triggered next something
series.
New.
Yeah. There's certainly an interesting premise for the next season, isn't there?
With
everyone else in control and all the baddies effectively locked up and a pet alien that you can talk to.
Well, two, actually.
This is the thing. They've still got half a dozen unhatched eggs there.
Yep.
What if there's a queen there?
Ooh.
What's going to be the situation with the two aliens if you enter a queen into the mix?
Yeah, because will they listen to Wendy anymore?
Yeah. It's always been my thought, certainly for the majority of the alien films, it's been my thought that they are a hive mind.
Yeah.
The more aliens you have, the more intelligent they are.
Yeah,
probably. Certainly they can talk amongst each other, don't they?
Yeah.
I take it there's, I can't remember from the films, that there's no interest that the aliens have in synths at all. Is there
not as far as we've seen tore apart Ash, but that's mainly because he was an obstacle.
They need a living host. I mean, that's why they took Wendy's brother's lung.
If you saw when Kirsch was in the lab with the aliens, it didn't react. as soon as the boy Kavanagh walked in, one of them opened.
Yes, so it
can detect life or what, you know, a heartbeat, breathing lungs, or
that
whatever.
That makes the whole pet aliens a bit more convincing that it's a synth doing it. If it was a human, you'd be like, no way.
But I would like to see what would happen if they introduce a queen. Who would that alien follow?
Presumably, at the end of the series, assuming it gets to an end, all the aliens will have to be wiped out and they have to have a bit of a reset.
It's meant to be set 2 years before the first film, I think.
Apparently, yeah.
So we've probably got a huge battle coming.
Because it left with a load of ships heading there. I hope that isn't a spoiler.
Airships from... Weyland-Yutani.
Yes, you've got the ships coming, you've got the octopus occupying Arthur. We don't know what's coming with that, but that's going to be awful for his.
See, that would be a better name for it, an Occupy.
An Occupy.
Occupy. Yeah.
Will it be able to talk after it's taken over Arthur?
Well, they could make the sheep bar. Yeah. So
we didn't see the guy aboard the Maginot talk, but there wasn't a lot of time for him to react.
If it's got Arthur's body for any decent amount of time, because it didn't immediately start baying with the sheep, but at the end when we went into the pie thing, so perhaps
it's got to get used to it.
Yeah, it's got to work out vocal cords and the like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you didn't have many comedy moments, but there was one moment where the alien ends up on the beach and it looks at a crab feeding off Arthur's blood, and they just sort of look at each other
I'm suddenly reminded of, what is it, Finding Nemo, with those two crabs and the... Hey, hey, hey.
You can say what you like. I mean, the most frightening creature, and it wasn't the xenomorph, it wasn't the ticks, it wasn't the flies, it was the sheep.
It was
doing everything that a sheep shouldn't.
Like glaring.
I've never known
a sheep to glare.
Yeah, glaring and observing.
They're following you around the room.
Standing quietly.
Yeah. I mean, plotting, that's it.
It just reminded me, there's an album by Pink Floyd called Animals, and one of the songs on it is called Sheep.
Right.
And it's all about how sheep uprise and sort of overthrow their masters. I mean, that was what was running through my mind.
The inspiration.
It's interesting, because it's been an Alien series. The Aliens. Xenomorphs aren't really that prominent in it.
No, you've got a kind of menagerie of different aliens in it, haven't you?
And all extremely hostile.
As I said, my only complaint, if I have to give one, is they showed the alien in broad daylight in the middle of the jungle.
Yes.
Which... Mm-hmm. It looked a little bit man in the suity to me.
They should have kept it more. Sometimes it's full CG.
I do understand that.
One of the scenes where it was running,
it
definitely looked man in suity. But I liked the fact you got to see it more. This is the first time you've actually got to really know the aliens in this. In all the films and that, they're just sort of run in the ducting, appear, kill someone, run away again. But this time, with it talking to Wendy, you got a little more of a sense about what they were about. Because it was definitely looking for the baby.
And they found the baby in the end, didn't they? They were both on the cage.
The adult and, best way to describe it, teenager
version.
Because they've introduced two more stages to the alien growth cycle, which we haven't seen before.
You had the
chestburster. And then you had it in the cage just before the head detaches. The head's all one, but it still has arms and legs.
It's like when a frog's got legs and still got its tadpole tail. It's the intermediate stage.
Which we haven't seen before.
Because the chestburster, it's not very clear in Alien, but it is meant to be that snake-like thing, which is shown much better in this.
But in this one, it's a little bit bigger. The arms and legs may have been on the chestburster, but they're now detached. They're fully mobile and separate from the body.
You can see the tail curled up in a jar in a Mind Warp.
Yes, I know. Yes. I watched that this morning and I saw that bit,
I mean, one thing that comes to mind is when the Maginot sort of set off on its 65-year journey, I mean, was it sold in, you know, sort of purpose to pick up sort of life forms that are hostile or parasitical to humans?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm not necessarily sure if it was specifically hostile or parasitical.
Well, yes,
but it was certainly
unknown
to pick up unknown life forms.
Yeah. So do they all come from the same planet then? So we don't really, apart from all the stuff with the engineers, you don't really know where the xenomorphs come from.
Yeah, that's it. If you co-opt in the first couple of prequels.
Yeah.
But yeah, essentially from the first film, it was on a ship that was extraterrestrial to the planet it was found in.
Yeah.
Also, I'd like to point to something I've just mentioned is that flashback episode with Morrow. You get a little bit more of his backstory and the death of his child.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's more justification for
Why he is the way he is.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
I did like his fight with Sting. That was quite good. You thought Sting was going to win, but then he got his back broken.
He did quite impressively.
He did. Yeah. You thought it was over for him, but there he was right at the end, sort of sprawled out in the top of the cage, unable to move.
Milk running down his neck.
Yeah.
I mean, that is something else. I think one of the motivations for Kirst was trying to put himself up into a situation where he would have to face Moreau directly to prove how superior he was.
Mm. And he probably should be, because all that Moreau's got is an arm, really.
Yeah. An arm, but maybe more experience, which
perhaps.
I think he, in the fight, he
made use of it.
It's always my problem with a $6 million man. He might have bionic limbs.
Yeah.
But his back couldn't take all the stuff he's doing, surely.
As I said, we definitely have the arm, because the arm was artificial. You saw it because it was a different colour to the rest of him.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't know what else has been augmented inside him.
Mm. Yeah, true. But still, a full synth, you would think, would be able to beat a cyborg, generally.
This is it. I think Kirst was only going to believed he was only going to outthink him and didn't take into account Wendy as a variable.
Yeah.
Which, again, I have to point out with Boy Kavanagh, didn't take into account how far Wendy would have progressed beyond him.
Mm.
I mean, hacking into the entire computer system and
she's got the advantage of having Wi-Fi.
Yeah, just casually sweeping through the monitors. Yeah, with
and
the fingers.
Just by the end, she was just clicking her fingers to open cell doors.
Yeah, because it was his reaction when the cell door opened.
Yeah, he didn't. At one point, he said he pissed himself.
Yeah, I think I've wet myself.
He didn't seem to get the seriousness of the situation.
No.
When he was running away, he was on the radio going, $1 million to the man who comes and finds me.
And then skipped away.
It's like, you're going to die, dude.
As we were discussed, where the boy Kavanagh is concerned, I'm convinced that so far he has never been wrong. Mm. Everything he's thought out has worked. And nobody's told him no.
Because right at the end, he's tied up in the cage, and at that point, he knows he's lost, and he's laughing. That's the last thing you see, isn't it?
I think it's because it's a new experience.
It's something
that's never happened to him.
You know, one thing I noticed, I mean, whenever they quote Peter Pan, or one of the characters, Boy Kavanagh was reading Peter Pan, it just seems to be a very dark novel indeed. I mean,
in many ways it is.
Yeah, describing Neverland, sounds a very sinister place. I mean,
Do you know what the original Lost Boys, what happens to most of them? They all grow up in the end, and the majority of them end up working in offices.
Oh.
How dull and terrifying for them.
Tedious.
So our final thoughts on Alien Earth?
Very good. I thought they did a great job fitting it into that era.
Yes.
Even the music felt like Alien.
This is something I liked when it was novel. The recap for every episode is actually in the opening titles.
Yes.
So
you quick flashback
as well as the credits, you're also skipping the recap.
That's it. And at the end, instead of getting theme music, you get a classic rock track, or in some cases a hardcore rock track.
That is also in some way connected with what you've just seen.
Yeah.
But also tells you bad shit is going down.
So presumably, Weyland Yutani don't get an alien at the end of this, which is why they redirect.
Yeah, they're still trying to get one, yeah.
So they're going to be hunting down big alien and little alien in the jungle.
One would assume so. Mm. Or just quarantine and isolate the island.
Yeah.
And hope for the best. Yeah, but to quote Ripley from the original movie, It sounds like Weyland Yutani wanted them for their bioweapons division, so.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Yeah. All right, then. We all really enjoyed this. Mm-hmm. Jean isn't here because she didn't enjoy it, and we said, well, she can't come and play with us then. That's not true at all. Jean's at home doing quilting. But write to us and tell us what you thought of Alien Earth via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Right.
Yes.
We love a tenuous link here at Staggering Stories.
Oh, so tenuous. You can feel
very
it
tenuous.
You can feel it wobbly.
But this one, yes, this one was a wobbly link because, as most of you know, sets used in Aliens were also used in Mind Warp. So now we're watching Doctor Who. Pause for music. Take it away, chaps.
So, well, it's the second segment of the trial.
The infamous Trial of a Time Lord.
That's it. And we enter the paint box world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the guy.
Quantel?
It was something like new technology like Quantel.
It was called paint box.
It was paint box. Okay. Getting that right. We land on a beach and the doctor is hunting for a weapons gunrunner, really. Yeah.
But he takes a moment to berate the people of Earth for not harnessing the power of the ocean.
He does, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, it does take
and,
that moment.
How many times in the first episode does Perry not put a foot in it, but literally put a face in it? She gets the Lucosa.
Yeah.
She gets a couple of monsters.
The Lack.
And then the Valiard even points this out and goes, right, so we've done a little survey. your assistants, as he calls them, get into trouble twice as much as you, which is kind of the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's the point of assistance, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
And as he says, yeah, she just happened to be closer.
And that's it. And then to make things worse, the person that turned Perry into a bird woman is here.
Oh, no.
And Dave Hedgehog from Bottom is there as well.
Yeah, so we've got Syl.
Syl. Yes.
Keeping Swarfiga in business since 1983 or whatever.
Eating peaches with green dye.
Marshmallows.
And making it as gross as you possibly can. It was wonderful.
It's like he's changed colour now, hasn't he? Yes.
That's it.
Yeah, it's a different
shade of green.
It's modified.
He was brown. He's now gone green. His head has changed shape a bit.
This is what happens when you eat too much Swarfiga.
Yeah, I think it must be.
Different point. The whole thing shifts down and you can't see his eyes, can you?
At one point, the poor guy's blind. Yeah. It's up sitting on his nose.
You think Kiv's got problems?
Now, to me, Syl and Kiv, they reminded me of Ferengi.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? Yes. Particularly with the
Were they first or were the Ferengi first? Yes. I can't remember. Because they're both about the same time period.
This would have been before. Yeah. This is, what, 85?
Yeah. There's lots of wheeler-dealing going on there.
Though I did like the fact that because Lord Kiv's brain is mutating and getting larger than his head, you've got those two little bumps on his head.
Just very much like Ferengi bumps.
I wonder why, can't they just open his skull up a bit?
Yeah.
Put a metal plate in or something?
Do a bit of Morbius stuff on him.
Because there's already lots of brain experiments going on because of this condition.
Yes.
So is it Professor Crozier has been brought in?
Only one person in this story chewed the scenery more than Crozier. That was Brian Blessed. Verunig and other superbly overacted naughty words.
My favourite quote is, "He is Dorf, you are scum."
Honestly, it holds the world record for the most scenery chewed in.
If this scenery was also in Aliens, it's amazing it stayed upright. It really is.
Yeah.
The amount of crap going on.
But it's this and I think King Richard from Blackadder. They are both quite verbose, shall we say.
And of course, this was the first time that Doctor Who had done a really, really good death for a companion and then ruined it a couple of episodes later. They did it again with Doomsday, but this was the first.
They did. And in this one, it feels a bigger cheat because it's an actual death and your emotions invested in it. And then it's a one-liner a couple of months later.
Yeah. To all intents and purposes, you see her die.
And effectively, it's she's not dead. She fell in love.
Which, I mean, talk about an insult, you know. If that had been a male companion, he wouldn't have just fallen in love.
Yeah, exactly.
He's off fighting a war. I was so cross.
And not only that, as fans of the show, what you actually deal with in the moment is Perry's screaming and panicking, and then you see her again, she's gone.
Yeah.
At that point.
And that wasn't that amazing acting. Yes. She was panicking, she was struggling, she was being Perry.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's vicious gaze, and that, I know they changed the voice, but God, that was so good. Annoyingly, that was the best bit of acting we'd seen from I mean, she'd done well, but that was amazing.
Yeah, because she was acting and doing an accent the whole time, wasn't she? Yeah. So it must have been
That came across as if I thought she wasn't any good. I loved Perry.
Yeah.
And the accent was, but I really liked Perry, but this showed what she could do.
Yeah. They did her bad.
They did.
And again, in this one, she sort of reverts to the first season with Connor. Yeah, they're quite combative.
That is something I noticed, because previously we had Mysterious Planet,
mm-hmm.
where the Perry and Doctor dynamic is still the same, but it's shifted slightly.
Yeah.
He's still as caustic, but it's softened by a smile when he says things.
It was more bantery.
And then with this one, we go right back to as it was.
I think right at the start, though, there is that moment where she's saying, I'll just get changed. She's going, are you frightened it will clash? And I felt that was still quite playful.
Yeah.
Mm. Maybe.
That it was done with a smile. But due to the mind warp the Doctor suffers and the interference the Valyard puts in and various...
Also the fact that she discovers the Doctor's lied to her.
He's
brought her along to Syl's home planet. She says, I want out.
Yeah.
Really early in the first episode. Yeah. And he ignores it entirely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. With him acting out of character, not that anyone knew how he should have been playing at the time, but it is kind of sad that Perry's first and last moments with the Sixth Doctor were effectively him trying to kill her at some point.
Essentially.
Yeah. And he never even thought about going to try and get her.
No.
To get her back after Trial of a Time Lord was over.
Yeah.
Didn't even think about
Big Finish,
Fortunately, we have Big Finish, and they have...
Yeah, Big Finish right many wrongs.
Yeah.
Well, yes, but...
Certainly where...
Obviously, within the confines of the programme, Nicola Bryan's left. I mean, what
should
can
have,
you do?
Should have done it better. They should have done it better.
They should have at least...
There should have been another episode where he goes back to find her, and she's one with the cause now and doesn't want to go.
Well,
not because she's fallen in love, but because she's fighting this war.
Or at least have a specially shot scene of her and Yukarnos to look at. Rather than just that, random that shot.
It was a random shot.
That heart over the top of it.
Yeah, in pink hearts around it or whatever.
Now, it was the 80s, come on.
Yeah.
In the Mind Warp novelisation, Philip Martin, is it?
Yeah,
Martin. He does go into detail after they discover Perry's okay, and Yukarnos is a wrestler, and Perry is his wife, and apparently it's a really nice
they're
life.
They're back on Earth somehow.
Yeah, becomes a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So at the time, Colin didn't know how to play it. The writer didn't know how he should be playing it.
Yeah.
The director didn't know how he should be playing it. Yeah. You get this kind of mishmash of scenes that don't quite have continuity. But I don't know about you, I feel the moment that he comes back to himself is the minute he eats the minnow that Syl's eating, and his stomach turns and he looks at Syl guzzling these things down, and that's when he wakes up and thinks, what am I doing?
Though there is a nice bit that stuck in my mind with Colin, it's just that he had no idea how to play it.
Yeah.
But you have the banter between Yukarnos and Perry when they first meet. And you've got Colin in the middle, sort of nodding, smiling, and slowly sliding down the wall.
And that bit where he goes, weapons!
Yeah. So he may not have known what he was doing, but he did it gloriously.
Yeah.
I don't know about the rest of you, but obviously we'd seen Earthshock, and I was like, whoa, that was a bit sad.
Yeah.
But I was never really that fond of Adric in the first place, so it wasn't sort of like, oh my God, woe is me, teenage angst sad.
Still a bit of a shocker.
Yeah. I do remember going...
Yeah. But this one, it was a genuine, oh my God, what have they done to her?
Yeah.
And it really,
midway through a season, too.
Yeah, it really did get me more than Earthshock did.
Yeah.
Also, because the Cybermen don't care anyway, you can't really bring it up in further stories, the Doctor going, you killed my companion. With this one, there was, if Syl had come back, you would have had the chance to have that combativeness between him and the Doctor. Mm. But I still think Yukarnosh should have killed Perry, because that's where the story was heading.
Yeah.
And then Yukarnosh probably should have got gunned down as well, been the end of that.
Blake 70.
Syl should have survived. So there was that unresolved issue for the Doctor to resolve down the line.
Sometimes you need a Blake 7 ending to
make
things
right. You? Yeah.
Because he was meant to come back, wasn't he, Syl, in the next season?
Yes. There was a
mission to Magnus.
Ice Warriors, yeah.
So I don't know if it would have come up in that. Presumably they would have to at least reference it. I haven't read the book.
Unless he came back in a different period of his time.
It could be before,
his timeline.
No, hang on a minute. Mission to Magnus, that's the untransmitted series, isn't it? So that was what was there before they wrote
Trial.
Trial,
you're right.
Yeah. But it looks beautiful, this story. I don't remember any cheap effects. I do like the comedy Smurf voice from one of the guests that's talking to Kiv.
It was a pterileptil.
A repainted, slightly repainted pterileptil.
And there was that subplot towards the end after Kiv has his first temporary transplant. And he has the shock of waking up to Syl at close range.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. He's there every now and again. He's like, can you smell fish? Because you were all doing the convention circuit at this point, weren't you? Whereas I remember this as one of my first memories, Syl, the slugs and the trial. Mm. But yeah, I do remember it. Maybe this is what made me come back to Doctor Who a bit more, because I do remember it looking very alien and being very scared.
Yeah. It's very dark. They actually managed to turn the lights down.
A lot of the set dressing was black drapery. And
it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that nice shot of the Crozier's laboratory where they zoomed out and you could see the framework of it. Yeah.
And it's a real sort of shock that you're looking at something so bright, isn't it? Because everything's so dark. Yeah. And I think this is the first series where they do it all on videotape, isn't it? So it's
Could be.
For the time, it feels very modern. We look back now and think, doesn't look that
How
good.
How quaint.
Yeah. Well, I remember at the time thinking the effect with the sky and the sea and that. Mm. I loved it. Mm. Yeah. I thought it looked amazing.
That was impressive.
I'd never seen it before.
But now you look back
and go, ooh, 80s.
Yeah, indeed.
Did you notice the seagull in the background flying past? Yeah.
Yeah, it's right at the top of the screen. Yeah.
Oh. And also, I read up, and apparently this was just to the side of a nudist beach.
Yeah, apparently, even today it's a
what
nudist
is it would take with Nicola Bryant a nudist beach? Planet of Fire, she was rescued by a German nudist.
This is because she almost gets assaulted every other story before trial, and in this one, when they're on the beach, she says dirty old warlord, so it's already happened, and then she meets Yukarnosh, he falls in love with her.
I think we have to go for our tenuous link. I think it was either episode one or episode two, where the Doctor sniffs a tube, a Perspex tube, which has the chest burster in it.
Yeah.
The chest burster for me.
And he just goes, ooh.
See, I hadn't, because I was a bit younger than you, I hadn't seen Alien.
Neither had I. It was only the fact that I'd watched it at lunchtime, just to refresh my memory. That's a chest burster.
It's the teeth, isn't it?
Yeah,
the teeth give it away, because the tail's all wrapped up. I never really worked it out until I think I watched the production subtitles, because I'm lying. And it went, it's the chest burster. Okay.
Yeah, no, at the time, I didn't recognise it.
Is that the John Hurt one?
The static version of
it. The static version.
Well, it's actually forced through his fake body.
Forced through another doctor's body.
Indeed, And we've got to mention the door, haven't we?
We have,
The expensive door.
Well, I think Nicola Bryan does.
The door? What door?
The big round door to Crozier's lab that goes...
Has a sound. It looks like a vault door.
Yeah.
That cost more than Nicola Bryant got paid to do her last story.
Only to hire it, not to build it.
Sorry, to hire it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, it looks like a massive double to a bolt.
Have they run out of plywood and bubble wrap?
I don't know what possessed them to spend so much money on a door.
We still remember the door.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. They'd already bought the corridor, hadn't they, from Aliens. So
yeah.
collecting the set.
So did any of these actors actually get paid, do you think?
Makes you wonder. Huh. I suspect that Brian Blessed probably got paid more than Nicola Bryant is.
Yeah.
That sort of era, unfortunately, isn't it?
Yeah. Legend has it he'd literally just finished Flash Gordon and he was asked by the BBC to come and do exactly what he'd just done, but for Doctor Who. So right. You have that big...
Veronique!
With less flying.
Yeah.
Well, as I say, he seems more in common with Richard III from Blackadder.
Yeah. Oh, it could be, yeah.
Richard IV from Blackadder.
So what's he going to expose his broad buttocks?
Or while he was doing the overacting, the loud, I'm a big tough dude, he was remarkably gentle with Perry.
Silky and gentle.
He picked Perry's her up. Concerned.
He did. Told her to marry her.
He did pick her up, so she was face levelled.
So he could shout at her. But,
And she did tame him at times, didn't she? Yeah. She did make him think twice about it.
She did instruct him.
Yeah.
Well, it was when she was asking him what the point was, and he was explaining, you know, well, we will fight, death, we will die, and we will go to the afterlife, to the halls of, let's say, Asgard.
Yeah.
And why? Want to fight?
Yeah, she has a nice smile.
Basically a Viking.
Yeah. Looked like a samurai, but basically he was a Viking. Yeah.
If they'd gone a bit further with that, you could sort of understand where it ended up.
Yeah.
But clearly they didn't have that in mind. Written. It's a shame. A good exit story for Perry.
I thought it was until, as I said, the further episode of
The Koga. The Koga.
Mm. I thought this was an absolute, because it's so different. It's absolutely fantastic. And if Yukarnos hadn't blown her away, you know, she could have come back as Kiv.
But it was kind of right that it was him to kill her. Technically wasn't her, was it? He killing Perry at all, but his revenge. But that all fades out, and then the Doctor just stands up, and there's sort of a mixture of silence and a broken voice.
You killed Perry.
Yeah, I would say the trial stuff was pretty pointless in this one.
The trial stuff dragged it down.
Especially in the first episode. Mm. I think it was handled a bit better seeing the Doctor's reactions, because she gets shot twice, doesn't she? Once as Perry at the end of episode 3, she gets gunned down, and then as Kiv in episode 4. That was
very
fine.
Gunned down.
Yeah, but in I think he interrupts like the first scene on the Thoris Beta when they're walking across the beach about inconsequential silliness to have an argument.
Just remind people.
Padding. Yeah. And we've said it before; it would have worked if maybe they only had one trial scene per episode and kept it to a minimum. Especially with this one, because there was a lot of tension and drama being built.
Or one at the beginning and one at the end.
Just leave the story alone. Yeah.
What was Crozier actually doing? So initially he did a full brain transplant into the fisherman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then he changed his mind entirely and then started doing mind uploads.
That's what it seemed to be.
Which is a very strange last minute switch.
As far as I can see, it was always meant to be transfer, pacification, modification. But the machine got damaged.
But the doctor helped him fix it.
Yeah, so I think that the brain transfer to the second Kiv, the second mentor, was a temporary respite.
It was a slightly bigger cranium, wasn't it?
And did he just have a eureka moment?
He may have just had
it. Scientists, their minds are all over
the place. It was meant to be he did the same sort of manipulation on the first creature, the monster, Rock, but it seemed to backslide and attack Perry. And so that was the major thing that was certainly for the first two episodes. And why had it attacked Perry?
And he also mentions that Kiv's race are all hybrids, didn't he?
Yeah.
That they'd all been sort of genetically altered and modified, along with the fisherman who retained his sting. And of course, we met one of the Kiv props, didn't we, in Peterborough?
Oh, yes.
He's aged very well, that prop.
He has. And it's also, oh, I can't remember the name of the actor, but it's his first Who.
Christopher Ryan.
Christopher Ryan, because he later returned as the Santarans in the new series.
A couple of times.
Is it Stike? Or, I can't remember.
Stike, one of the... Something
of
beginning
was
with them.
Stike, the cool person in the young one.
Stike was two doctors, isn't it?
Stike.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but he also appeared in the Atmos two-part, and then he came back for Pandoric Opens.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
We want to know what you all think. So why don't you write to us? Is this the CBeebies voice, do you think?
It could be.
Boys and girls, it's quite a scary story in places. So make sure you sit with your mummy and daddy so they can hold your hand if you get a bit scared. Write to us via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
You scared the dog.
Oh, sorry.
No, not you. It was him. Adam, do we have any feedback?
We do have some audio feedback.
Oh, excellent.
Before feedback, is it me or does someone have a hat at a jaunty angle?
He does, yes.
My God.
Does. That with an inky on it.
Dinky.
1, 2, 3.
Hello, Head of Pertwee.
Hello, Dinky. Hello, Inky.
Hello, Terence.
Various nebulas.
Dave Zilla the Mighty.
Graham. Terence.
Moomin.
Sandy.
Folded up and propped against a radiator.
Orange Clara.
Clara,
yes.
Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spot.
Goats.
Yes.
So many goats. How cross will you be, Adam, if we all get you goats for Christmas again?
Can you find more goats that are different? I don't know.
Oh, a challenge!
There again, one of those goats on the table, it looks like he's got one eye bigger than the other.
Oh, no.
Has he got the Occupy in him?
or the Oedipus, no.
No, you're obsessed. Obsessed! Sorry, is it Tim?
Yes, the first one is from Tim.
Oh,
I'm psychic.
Hello, Staggerers. Hello, Head of Pertwee. Hello, the rest of the menagerie. It's Tim from Tim's Take On here with another of my very occasional bits of feedback, but I felt inspired on it seems like an unseasonally warm end of September we have in 2025. Hello, global warming. A belated thank you to Adam for being the only person to attend this year's Sharda Tour. We had a couple of last-minute dropouts. Andy Nunny couldn't make it due to train problems.
Is he naming and shaming?
Someone else couldn't make it, and I didn't really get a message from them as to why, but hopefully we'll have a few more attendees next year. And
yeah, for me. It's good, though. Yeah, thank you.
September seems to be a good time for the Sharda Tour, because it's after people have finished going off on holiday and things, and hopefully doesn't clash with anything. You can't win these days. You try to organise a small, low-scale Doctor Who event only to find someone's got something on at the beer fight or someone's got something on at the quad in Derby. Mm-hmm. But I thought I'd briefly talk Big Finish Doctor Who I've returned to recently for a couple of reasons. One, the long-awaited Jodie Whittaker episodes are now out.
Oh, the second one's out.
And slightly later than when they came out, I noticed that the physical releases had already sold out, the CDs, and I'm a bit of an old fuddy-duddy, and I like my physical media.
Agreed.
But I went, oh, well, I'll get them as the download. So I watched Vampire Weekend.
Watched it?
Which I thought it was all right.
Oh,
it was nice to have the characters back together, the Doctor and Yaz.
Up a tree.
And there was some good gags in it, like it was a hen do and
the chickens.
Doctor shows up with a bunch of chickens. But I think I listened to it early on a Sunday morning and it was so interesting I fell asleep, and it was not exciting me enough to rewind and listen to the end of again. But it was
horribly
good to hear them back.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks later, and slightly oddly titled because you'd think they'd have released this one first, they released Doctor Who the 13th Doctor Adventures Return of the Doctor. And I listened to this about a couple of weeks ago, so it's reasonably fresh in my memory. This was so much better.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard that one yet.
I don't know if it was because there was less characters in it. It just sort of felt so much more on track. So hopefully we can have more of the same from Big Finish with the 13th Doctor, because my brother, who's on the autistic spectrum, doesn't quite get on with Jodie Whittaker's Doctor. And I say, well, what is it you don't like about her? And he says, she talks too fast. And even though she's kind of brought that over to the audios, I don't mind that whole fast-talking, enthusiastic, slightly at times socially inept Doctor that she's bringing to life. And then also on the big Finnish front, and this refers back to Whoville 16, all praise Steve, Steve and Andrew, who organised Whoville, another excellent Whoville we had this year.
Yes.
Well, Terry Molloy was on stage.
Yeah. Santa.
And I've done the rather odd thing of buying a big Finnish box set slightly out of context. Terry Molloy had high praise for the Eighth Doctor and Davros story, Palindrome.
Yes.
So I made a note of this.
Yes.
And I went, oh, when I get round to buying some more Big Finish, I'll track down this Palindrome. Turns out it's on a sort of Dalek-y box set of three stories.
Even better.
And it's quite long, so I haven't listened to it yet.
Oh.
And I'm trying to work out how to listen to it, and it might be a Sunday morning and a Sunday evening to spread out the two parts, because 2 hours of drama at once is quite a lot. Mm. But according to Terry Molloy, Davros is a different kind of character in that story.
Yeah.
So I look forward to listening to that. In other news, and this is although this is no longer news, it's just sort of something we're waiting for now. I don't know if it's good news or not. Doctor Who for six-year-olds, CBeebies animated series on the way in 2027. I guess I'm looking forward to it.
new Doctor we're going to get from TV. I read
the pitch document that they sent out to production companies, and then, as I'm not a parent, I don't know much about CBeebies, so I did a bit of research about animation on the CBeebies. Basically, the episodes are going to be 11 minutes long, so my advice to them is, can it all be two-parters? We have cliffhangers, and we have a 22-minute story. Because I don't know how you can tell a family-friendly, barely violent Doctor Who story in just 11 minutes.
That'd be quite simple.
I'm not a fiction writer, so maybe there's ways of doing it.
Oh, yeah.
CBeebies have faith in the idea. They're very experienced at broadcasting to children, so I can't really complain on that front. The other bit of thing before I say goodbye is I recently, very late, joined the Nintendo Switch party.
Okay.
I finally own a Nintendo Switch.
An original.
To partner my PS4 hooked up to my TV. Although the great thing about a Nintendo Switch is you don't need to hook it up to the TV.
Indeed.
I forked out for the one which is slightly more recent with the OLED display on.
It's got
an amazing display on. I'm massively addicted to playing Mario Kart 8 on it.
Yeah.
And then I forked out initially just £3.50 for a month's subscription to the Nintendo Classics section.
Ooh,
and
okay.
So you can run. There it is, running an old Game Boy game.
Okay.
So you can run old Nintendo games
awesome.
On Nintendo hardware, which is a lot of fun. And it also means you fork out a relatively small amount of money and get a lot of games in return, which is something that just struck me this afternoon, or even today, because I've only got one actual game, Mario Kart, and then I downloaded another one because I found in the Nintendo shop there was games you can download for free.
Oh.
And I went, there's free games for the Switch?
I found a
Disney karting game, so I downloaded that, but I'm genuinely tempted to fork out for the more expensive subscription for the Switch, where you pay them £30 a year and you have access to most of their old console games, so Game Boys, Game Boy Advance, NES, SNES, and N64. All of that's available for £30 a year.
That's not bad.
And when you consider one state-of-the-art Nintendo Switch game can be £35, £30, and getting all that back catalogue, and it being in this convenient thing that you know is going to be reliable because it's well made by Nintendo rather than some of the more bootleggy retro gaming consoles. Well, I hope it's not inappropriate to talk video gaming on here, but I find it's one of my geeky obsessions and
especially retro
well
games.
Worth a mention. So hopefully, maybe not the rest of the staggerers, but hopefully someone other than just Adam will make it to next year's Charlotte Tour, and of course we've got Whoville to look forward to next year.
Yep.
And the other thing I'm looking forward to in a geeky way, and it was just recently, this week, there's been a publicity stunt in London for this, the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy immersive show.
Yes, must get
and also, and I haven't bought a ticket for this yet, so I don't know if they're sold out, there's a on-stage event in London publicising an audiobook that I helped crowdfund about Douglas Adams. And so once I finish recording this, I'm going to look into whether that's sold out, because it would be... There's so little events you can get to as a Hitchhikers fan. Mm. And so to get to something as a Hitchhikers fan is always good.
Yeah.
So bye for now.
Bye, Tim.
Bye, Tim. just a tenuous link there. The Aliens Corridor and Mind Warp was also in Hitchhikers First.
The Vogon ship.
Yeah, the Vogon ship.
Also appear in Red
Lake
Dwarf.
Seven?
Red Dwarf, yeah.
Been around.
Hopefully it'll be in the immersive experience.
I don't know how that's going to work. It'd be interesting to... We must get the tickets, though.
Yeah.
Tickets from £42.
Oh, that's convenient.
How appropriate.
From what Tim was saying there about switches, my nephew is getting a brand new one for Christmas. This is about the only thing he's getting, and the Switch 2 games are about £70.
It's only the first party.
So £30 for a load of retro games. That's all I'd want one for, really.
I should play mine more often.
I have to tell Construct Number 2 about that.
Yeah.
Especially the free downloads.
Mm.
He probably already knows.
He probably told us.
Can I just point out that this pup is snuggling up to Crumbly?
Well, almost.
Close.
Mm. Well, this is voluntarily pointing at him.
Did she just randomly get bored? For a while.
Well, it's a leather sofa, so I don't know if she overheated a bit.
Yes. It's also gone 9. So we're now in the period where she thinks it's walk time.
Oh, so you're just lucky she didn't just pee in the corner.
It didn't look like she was finding a spot.
Yeah.
Do we have any other feedback?
We do. We have one more bit of audio feedback.
Ooh.
This time from Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hello, Jay.
Jay!
Greetings, Head of Pertwee and his colourful menagerie of misfit miniatures. Did you have to wait again until just a few moments ago just to be greeted? How unfair. Poor Head of Pertwee. It's been a few episodes since my last missive, and so figured it was about time to send another. Let's start off with Alien Earth.
Yeah.
This was a wonderful addition to the Alien franchise, and kudos to Noah Hawley and his crew for making it feel like it was set back in the day of the original Alien movie, with the retro-futuristic design of the Weyland-Yutani vessel Maginot and the tech level back on Earth.
Yeah.
Like many people, after this show was announced, I was skeptical as to how they would fit this into the timeline without having xenomorphs loose on the planet.
Mm.
Admittedly, we do have xenomorphs loose on the planet, but the decision to define them to the remote island of the Broye Cavaliers Prodigy Corporation was definitely a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the additions of the new alien creatures has created a new dynamic for the franchise where these stories are no longer solely about the xenomorphs.
Yeah.
While the xenomorphs continue to be a major part of the story, especially with regard to Wendy, or Marcy, the mystery around the Trypanohinca Ocellus and its history with the xenomorphs is still a question that has yet to be answered. So far, no news on whether a second season is coming or not, but as this show has been extremely well received, Disney would be fools not to do so.
Well,
of course, considering the recent drama regarding Jimmy Kimmel that you touched on in your last podcast, Disney have shown that they can be fools,
indeed,
even if they did rightly backtrack on the decision there.
Mm.
Now on to Star Trek Strange New Worlds. I've really enjoyed this series, as it has continued to put out good episodes this season.
Yeah.
Not all of them were great episodes, and I think this was a slightly weaker season than last, but overall, still a fairly strong showing.
Yeah.
I do think that some of the comedic attempts this time didn't quite hit the mark. For example, some of them in 4.5 Falcons felt a little flat, or kept trying to use the same joke again, Spock being half-human, for example, where it was funny the first time, but quickly became tiring.
Mm.
For the back half of the season, I think that Terrarium was a standout episode. Mm. Finally, after 28 episodes of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, we get an Ortegas-focused one. And Melissa Navier did a marvellous job of carrying a good part of it by herself.
Yeah.
Since her experience with the Gorn back in the first episode of this season, we've had the occasional bit of her dealing with the trauma of what happened, and this encounter with another Gorn on the moon was necessary in her journey of healing by helping her see that, despite their monstrous appearance, Gorns are just people too. While we have only a season and a half, since the final one will be just shortened to 6 episodes, I hope that she'll get at least one more chance to shine in the spotlight, rather than just flying the ship. The season finale, in particular, the final moments, confused me as it felt like the producers were putting a coda on the series.
It did.
And it felt like it could have served as a series finale.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why they did that, since the fourth season was confirmed back in April of 2024, and filming of this season didn't finish until May. Now for Doctor Who Father's Day. It's been a little over 13 years since I last looked at this one. Back when I was podcasting regularly myself. Mm-hmm. It was good to go back just this past week to look at this story, as it was a reminder of just how good Christopher Eccleston was as the Doctor, and how it's a shame we only got one TV season out of him. I'm woefully behind on Big Finish offerings in general, so haven't heard the stories that Christopher Eccleston has done for them yet.
Lots of good.
Paul Cornell's story gave us an interesting look as to the consequences of meddling in time without the Time Wards watching over things. It's just a shame that the Reavers only made this one appearance and were never seen again, at least on TV anyway. Of course, such is the fate of many a Doctor Who monster.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for this only appearance of them, the CG doesn't quite hold up as good as some things, but this is more than made up for with the emotional beats of the story. For all of his being a cut-price Del Boy, Pete Tyler certainly provides the heart of this story, and his sacrifice, which he worked out all by himself despite the Doctor having figured it out early on, means so much more because of it. Of course, yet another story when the Doctor doesn't save the day, though not for lack of trying. Now, before I go, hello to Adam, Crumbly, Fake Keith, Gene, Scott, and the real Keith Dunn. Even if some of you may be off elsewhere this week. Yeah. Yes, I waited until towards the end of my feedback to say hi this time, because I think it's high time that you got a taste of what you do to the poor head of Pertwee each time. So there. Anyway, that's all for now. Cheerio, Jay.
Thank you, Joe.
Sticking out for the head.
Lead us out, Crumbly. Yeah.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Aww.
But never fear, in the next one there'll be more of the same. More fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more old and new. So until that.
A for alien. Absolutely.
Ambidextrous.
Awesome.
Appendage.
Amphibious.
With antlers. Mm.
Comes angling.
Awesomely.
Around us.
This is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Farewell.
Goodbye.
Farewell.
It's not our abilities that show who we truly are. It's our choices.
That was wonderfully brief. You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 482, featuring Adam Purcell, Andy Simpkins, Fake Keith, Asda Man, and the real Keith Dunn. The views are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente and Fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net.
Woo!
Does not have my addendum. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I struggled to find news this time.
Over to you, Crumbly. Oh, we need to do the testy thing, don't we?
Testy and
quiet. And no breathing.
Oh, yeah. I showed everyone at home that little sample. I was like, you can hear someone swallowing.
Well, picks up everything, yes.
This is why me and him hold our breath. And it's a little game.
You did.
Right, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
One, two, three.
Victory! you may hear my stomach digesting. I just heard it go. I was watching Trix to see what she thought. Everyone just suddenly paused. Are we recording?
We are recording.
Okay.
Excellent. I did wonder where this was going.
Yeah. I thought someone was going to mention the door that earned more than Nicola Bryan.
Yeah, that one I'm sure will come up. She always mentions it.
Yeah.
Though the story... Oops, my glasses just fell on my nose and now I can't see.
Fans of
gesticulating...
So what was it called again? What was it? Occupy.
Occupy Wall Street.
Oedipus.
Oedipuses.
That sounds a bit incestuous, that does.